Good evening. Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining us tonight for Spices of India, Preserving India's Cooking Traditions. My name is Cynthia Miyashita. I'm a volunteer here. I serve as the chairman of the club's Asia-Pacific Affairs Forum. And I'd also like to thank our other APA forum members, David Platt, Lily Nakagawa, and Celia Mensel, who volunteer here regularly at the club. Before I introduce tonight's speaker, I'd like to call your attention to a few upcoming programs we have. We're going to be doing another food event September 16th. We're holding a dinner at the Straits Restaurant, which is in the Westfield Shopping Center. It's a Pan-Asian blend of cuisines, so that should be a lot of fun. On September 17th, we're lucky to have a speaker of a new book called Extreme Toyota, Radical Contradictions That Drive the World's Best Manufacturer. They've now exceeded GM in car sales the first quarter of this year. Hiro Takeuchi, who's our speaker, works closely with Michael Porter at Harvard on competitive strategy, and he's one of the authors of this book that has just come out, so that's September 17th. October, we are going to welcome Alice Cravens of Modern Tea, and we'll be doing a tea tasting. So you'll see more of that in our club newsletter. If you'd like me to send you an email reminding you of upcoming programs or giving you early notice, feel free to give me your name and email address on the sign-up sheet outside. Also like to welcome anyone who is not a member of the Commonwealth Club, and we'd certainly like to invite you to join. At this time, let me ask you to turn off your cell phones and beepers and all of that, and I'm going to do a second introduction. We record our programs here for our archives, as well as for possible radio broadcast. So this time it's my pleasure to welcome tonight's speaker. Welcome again to the Commonwealth Club of California. Tonight's program is The Spices of India, Preserving India's Cooking Traditions, with Ranjan Day, chef of the New Delhi restaurant here in San Francisco. Ranjan Day started his career in the food business at the age of 14, at Calcutta's Park Hotel as a vegetable cutter. After finishing high school, he graduated from the Institute of Catering Technology, Hotel Management, and Applied Nutrition. He opened his first New Delhi restaurant in Hong Kong. San Francisco's New Delhi restaurant was established in 1988 and was opened by San Francisco Mayor Art Agnos. Since then, many dignitaries have crossed its threshold, from Pete Wilson and Jerry Brown to Julia Child, Graham Kerr, and Martin Yan. When Bill Clinton wanted to meet the Indian Bay Area community, he came to the New Delhi restaurant. His restaurant was named the finest Indian restaurant by the New York Times for vegetarian and Indian cuisine. PBS produced My India with Ranjan Day, a series of TV shows featuring Indian culture, cuisine, and travel adventure, some of Ranjan's favorite topics. I'd also like to mention that Ranjan is the leader of the Compassionate Chefs Cafe. It's a San Francisco nonprofit organization that works with the Tenderloin After School Program in San Francisco and with the Gandhi Ashram in New Delhi, India, to uplift the lives of children and provide them with important resources to become members of the global village. Would you please join me in welcoming Ranjan Day?
Such an amazing introduction, what can I say? Let's eat. Well, this is my passion. My passion is to infect everybody with India and to bring to you the attention about culinary traditions, about food, about what is important. So I want to welcome you to this program about preserving Indian cooking traditions. Now, you'll ask, what is Indian cooking traditions? Well, that is going to take most probably 3 days to explain. Because India is an amazing country. It has 28 states. Each state has its own cuisine, own culture, but its own language, its own script, its own festival. So it's kind of like if you can imagine putting Europe together in one country. So when we grow up in India, we grow up with at least three languages in today's day: English, Hindi, which is the national language, and our mother tongue. Like, I am from Calcutta, so that's the state of Bengal, so I'm Bengali, so I speak Bengali. So if you ask me what is the cooking tradition, it is very, very varied. So we have to start with at least saying, well, there's northern cuisine of India, southern cuisine of India, eastern cuisine of India, and western. I mean, this is like a really, really broad category. So, you know, traditionally, when we look at a cooking style, there are many things which is involved. The first thing is, in tradition, one of the essence or the luxury is time. So we can do things in really quality, with really attention to that, enjoy it immensely, and then, you know, take time to cook as well as enjoy. So we start with ingredients in the old traditional cooking. What would you do with the ingredient? Like, in the old traditional style of cooking, it is very, very common in every home in India. Once upon a time, it's not happening that much today. The day before, whoever is in charge of cooking will plan a menu, and accordingly, they will soak some of the dry spices, whether it is cumin, coriander, turmeric, but turmeric, I'm talking about the big pieces of turmeric, the chilies, you know, they will soak it so that it becomes a little bit softer. In the morning, somebody will come who is called a masalchi, or one of the servants who comes in or goes home to home just to grind the spices. There's a flat piece of stone, and there's a like a rolling pin style stone, and then you just grind it. So even the texture is different. When you grind today, you use a blender. And the blender, with the speed and everything, is a totally different kind of texture which you will have when you're cooking with those same spices. So, you know, then comes the part where you are waking up, you have this wonderful luxury of time so that you can enjoy the whole process of cooking slowly, you know, include maybe other people in the family, and then comes, okay, the lunchtime. People come back from work, you know, they have the luxury of coming back and enjoying a lunch, and then maybe taking a siesta and going back. So these are really, really nice, you know, amazing way of living life. I mean, the quality of lifestyle was so different. Today, it's kind of different, you know. Even, I mean, India has just been on like this whole massive speed wagon, you know, with all this information technology, all the other biotech, with manufacturing, everything else. And it all has to do with the global economy, you know, finding that whole niche where India is providing so many other things. So things are becoming faster pace. And when that thing happens, the luxury of time disappears. You have other things. Oh gosh, you get stressed. I got to have a beer, you know. That was never the problem before. We'll have some tea in the evening and let's solve the whole world problem. Sitting together around a, you know, table, having snacks. But that's very, very uncommon nowadays. Same with what happened. So let's talk about new cooking traditions versus the older cooking tradition. New cooking traditions, there's everybody who's working at home, you know, most of the grandpa, grandma taking care of the kids, sometimes older mom and dad taking care of the kids, but there is, everybody else has gone out to work. Nobody's cooking. The ingredients are different when you go to the stores. It's completely different. Very few things are being sold which are whole spices. But you get powdered spice. You get powdered turmeric. You get powdered chili powder. You get powdered, you know, even ginger powder, garlic powder, which was never used before in India, you know, unheard of. What is garlic powder? You know, you have fresh garlic. Onion powder, what is that? So we are cooking in India with dry spices. Cooking technique and dry spices are very, very different. You know, there are certain essential oils in spices which gives you the flavor of the spice. Now, you know, there is something called flash point in oils. So if you put oil in a pan and you just heat it, there will be a point when that oil will catch fire. That's called the flash point. The flash point of essential oils in the spices are very low. It catches fire very quickly at a very lower heat. So when you're cooking spices and dry spices, if you are just putting it directly into the fire or hot pan, it will burn it. So if the oil gets burned, it becomes rancid. What does that mean? In scientific term, that means the fatty acid separates into glycerol and fatty acid. That gives you the stomach problem. You know, it becomes rancid. So always cook really, really carefully with dry spices. The new, you know, versus the old traditional styles of enjoying yourself. We don't have time. We're talking about time. And here, the gentleman is laughing at me because he's like, oh, God, I didn't have time. I had to come back right now. So we don't have time. We have different ways of enjoying things. Fast, everything fast. We don't have. I was just speaking to a gentleman right there, original from Montreal. He was just saying, I wish people knew the enjoyment of silence, which we don't, because there's so many things happening. Just don't take time to really slow down. But, you know, in life, I think both is possible. As long as we have some moderation in it, it is possible to have the amenities which technology provides, but also learn from the tradition so that we can preserve it. So on that note, what I want to do is ask you to open the first page so that I can read the Indian food ethos, which was written in 1500 BC. And it says, from earth sprang herbs, from herbs food, from food seed, from seed mankind. Mankind does consist of the essence of food. From food are all creatures produced. By food do they grow. The self consists of food, of breath, of mind, of understanding, of bliss. This is from the Upanishads, going back 1500 BC. Let's fast forward that to today. What does that mean? That means whatever you're putting in your body actually affects you and me and our second generation and the generation after that. We are growing things very, very differently nowadays. It's all about producing something very quickly in a commercial way so that I can bring it to the market very quickly. It's all about transporting that very quickly in a very uniform way. It's not about the taste. It's about profitability. So the chickens which you're using with so much hormones, that is the reason why a lot of girls today are having periods so early, because of the growth hormones. That's the reason we are having so many other problems, you know, including obesity and so many other things. But we can choose. We do have the option of choosing what to put in our body. And if we can combine this old, you know, wisdom with our new technology and really apply it, I think we can still have a wonderful life. Life is short, so we have to enjoy it. We can do tasty, healthy, quick and easy, you know? And one of the things we can do that is by using certain traditions to do one-pot meals. We can easily do one-pot meals. And we can cook that, which is really tasty, healthy, quick, and easy, and at the same time, use ingredients, which are amazing, which are good for you, and easy to cook. So, one of the things I wanted to really mention here is the style of cooking. You know, a lot of things in today's space, the older tradition was, okay, everybody was gathering around the kitchen. Everybody saw everybody cooking. Everybody burnt their finger trying to do this and that. It's not happening nowadays that much, you know? So what I would definitely like you to encourage in your family is to perhaps just try cooking one pot meal more often. That way, it's not a rocket science. You can make some mistake, and then you would know how to work with it. And you will start enjoying it. It's just like painting the wall. Instead of, you know, hiring somebody out and then painting, if you paint it, you feel, like, really good about it, even though there's a little spot which you missed. So I think, you know, that's very important. So with that in mind, what I did was I want to show you today how to do a quick one-pot meal. One of the things I did, I created a line of spices called New World Spices. I went into the history of India, dug out favorite dishes of three kings and three queens representing six different regions. We're talking about the diversities. For example, one of my favorite is Calcutta lemon mustard curry. Could be because I'm Bengali, right? And there's a portrait of the queen on top of it. She fought for women's lib. It was in 1887. Before that, only boys could go to school. She fought so that boys and girls could go to school. And her favorite dish was lemon mustard fish curry. That inspired me to create the Calcutta lemon mustard curry. Why did I do this? I didn't do it for any other reason but because of my American wife. Talk about tradition. She wanted to cook like me, and I said, honey, that's not going to happen, you know? So, you know, that inspired me, like, how can I do something which she can cook with, too? Because the flavors are so different. So going back to traditions, and then I'll come back to this curry. Traditionally, you know, curry is something which in India just means a sauce. And curry is usually yellow in color. So how would you cook a curry? I would say there's two things to remember. In curry, there is the wet trinity and a dry trinity in today's world. What is the wet trinity? Wet trinity is onion, ginger, and garlic. Onion is almost, if you are cooking for four people, about 1 cup of onions, and about 1 teaspoon of garlic, 1 teaspoon of ginger. And then you grind them. And it's you can put them all in a blender. And so that's the wet trinity. The dry trinity is turmeric, coriander, and cumin. So for four people, it will be like half a teaspoon of turmeric, 1 teaspoon of cumin, and 2 teaspoons of coriander powder. And so you will start your oil with a little bit of oil, fry the wet trinities until they're just about to get golden color, add the dry trinity in it with a little bit of water. Why? That takes the temperature down and doesn't let the dry spices burn. And then you cook it up, and then you can put your choice of vegetables or meats and then just cook until it's done. Add a little water to make thicker or lighter gravy. Or, you know, you can add more ingredients to it. But basic curry is that. But there is like thousands and thousands and thousands of varieties of that. So that's how we came about making the spices. So like to give that traditional regional flavors, I went back and then created these blends. But there is so much more. You have barbecues. You have, in south of India, you have all the rice-based dish. But you can start with just one or two things which you really like and start cooking them more often, and then you'll enjoy them. Any questions so far? Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to do a little demo of how to cook something tasty, healthy, quick, and easy with the lemon mustard curry. And then we will continue the talk, okay? Thank you. This is just a small, you know, little cooking electric skillet. And for me, I just heat it up a little bit with some oil. It's a vegetable oil. I like a soy-based oil, preferably, because there is many kind of vegetable oil. And I have some chicken. It's boneless chicken, some green peas, and some steamed rice. This will feed most probably like one person really nicely, and I want to, or two people, but I wanted to show you that you can easily do something for one person, because sometimes you're just cooking for one person and you don't feel like cooking. It's not necessary not to do it. You know, you can easily do that. First, make sure the oil is nice and hot. And then what I usually do, I usually put the chicken first, because chicken has a little moisture in it. And when I put the spices with the chicken, then the spices, you know, will not go right to the oil, which will burn it right away. So this gives it a little time to cook slowly. So, make sure. It's not ready yet. So we are just enjoying the luxury of time. Because when, yes. Yes, if you're going to use them as a sprinkling things or just adding to it, yes, that's great. But what happens is then you have to use it right away. For example, if we are talking about cumin. Cumin has many kind of persona, you know? If you're using okay, I'm going to use the spices because there's a little bit of oil in it. This is a lemon mustard curry. For me, you know, those recipes are on the side. So for me, I'm just used to cooking it. Just trying to. That's my, you know, being in the kitchen, trying to keep it clean, kind of mode. Then I'll add again the green peas first, because it has more of a little, you know. little water in it. I beg your pardon? They are raw. A little water. A little salt. And it's, see, this is going to be cooked while we are talking. There's a little salt in there. A little salt. Very little salt. Because I'm going to make it a one-pot meal, right? All right. Then I'll just cover it and cook it for a little while until I put the rice in. Okay, cumin. So cumin has, I would say, three different kind of persona. If cumin is raw, and if you're just adding cumin to water, it has a very nice, distinct flavor. As soon as you take cumin and temper it, for example, you want to do a little bit of vegetables, which is teen, but wants to give the flavor. You take a little oil, you put the cumin in the oil. It starts giving you a nutty flavor. And then you put the vegetables in it and saute it with a little oil. Fabulous. Totally different flavor. Now you take the same cumin, you dry roast it, and you crush them up. It has a very nice and earthy flavor. Same with mustard. Mustard has this Jekyll and Hyde kind of persona. You know, the Jekyll is like, okay, you temper it in the oil. It has nice nutty flavor, it's not spicy, but you grind them and then start using them. Oh, you have a nice spicy taste to it, you know? So every spice, the way you're going to deal with it, how you're going to apply heat, how you're going to apply different oils and other ingredients, is going to kind of result in different results of flavors and taste. So I think your question was, what happens if I'm pan roasting it? It all depends how you're going to apply it. You can make a yogurt dip, pan roast the cumin, you know, grind it, sprinkle on top of that, it will become a fabulous dip. Or even, you know, even a great dressing for a salad or something. Or you can use that, take some, you know, maybe raw fish with a little bit of chili powder, maybe add a little cumin and mustard, dry roast it, grind it, apply a little oil, then rub it and throw it on a grill. Will be the hero of the neighborhood, as long as you're inviting other people, you know. Any other questions so far? Yes. Yeah. You can definitely use it for a long time. I mean, with all our airtight jars and everything, who has time to kind of every time roast it, right? Can roast it as long as you're not using after a whole year, you know. For a month, it's going to be fine. For, you know, it's just practicality. Just. Any other questions? Yes.
Would you soak cumin?
You can soak cumin, and you can grind it, and then use it instead of the dry trinity. In the older time, we would soak cumin, and we grind it, and use it in the curry. So everything was wet trinity once upon a time. In the newer style of cooking, we have a wet and a dry trinity. Like the today's cooking style, because nobody actually soaks the cumin, whole cumin seed, they just buy cumin powder to use it. That's why it is dry trinity today. In the older traditional ways, traditional time, and the traditional way of cooking, we will soak the cumin overnight, or sometimes if you don't have time, even 1 hour, 2 hours, then we will grind it to make it a cumin paste. We'll take the coriander seed, or, you know, coriander basically is cilantro. So cilantro seed, which is round in shape. Today you have coriander powder. Most of the people don't even know what is a coriander seed or how it looks. But the traditional way is to take the coriander seed and soak it, and then make a paste with it. And same with turmeric. Nobody knows how a turmeric looks because you just see turmeric powder. It looks like a ginger root. But you know, you can buy it really hard because you take the whole turmeric root and you dry it, and then you sell it. A very young turmeric is an ingredient in all the Hindu pujas and also a medicinal ingredient in a big way. A lot of times, and even today in Ayurvedic style, you will put, you know, turmeric roots and cut it into slices, dip it in milk, and let it soak overnight and drink it in the morning. It really helps a lot of internal ulcers. And it helps with a lot of cancer and stuff like that. So it's almost ready. Look, it didn't take that long, right? And now I'll just put the rice in it and mix it up and it's done. So I think everybody can do that, right? And then if you don't want to, you can just buy the rice from your little Safeway store or whatever, you know, if you don't have the time. But you can still cook this very quickly enough to have a fabulous meal. I put a little extra salt in the beginning because I was going to put the rice so that it can, you know, taste really good so that you don't have to shake in the salt later on. Voila, it's all ready to go. Yes, it is. But you can use any kind of rice, you know. Including brown. Brown definitely is really not a rice, but you know, a lot of people are low carb and they can. You can use any kind of grains. I mean, if you don't want to use rice at all, you know, there's so many other options. It is first you start with the wet, and then you add the dry to it. Otherwise, it will, you know, maybe have a little disastrous result. But it's okay. You can try it once, then you know you. what I did, we have these spices. This is a little pitch for the sale. We have the spices here for you for $25 each, and five of those dollars will go to Compassionate Chef's Cafe. Now, Compassionate Chef's Cafe was started by me. New Delhi restaurant transforms into Compassionate Chef's Cafe twice a year. During May, the Memorial Day weekend, and again in November, two Sundays before the Thanksgiving Sunday. May is always an amazing foodie event, and November is a food and beverage industry event. Last May, we did this whole thing about Chinese, Indian cuisine and culture, because during the Opium War, about 70,000 Chinese moved into India, and they took over basically three different industries. One was entertainment. They were amazing singers and entertainers. One is handmade shoes, leather shoes. And the third is Chinese restaurants. However, they were mainly from the Hakka region. And their food in India is totally different. The taste is totally different and amazing. And our guest of honor was Martin Yan. And we were celebrating the richness of the two of the oldest ancient culture, China and India. And if you go to the Compassionate Chef's Cafe, you can enjoy the belly dancing chefs, and that will be me and Martin Yan with the belly dancer. Now, you also say, what does Compassionate Chef's Cafe do? What we do is we create global citizens. You know, you are all global citizens. You're not just Americans or Indians or Chinese or Japanese anymore. We are all global citizens. But the kids in the Tenderloin, they don't feel that, because their playground is the narrow corridors of their apartment buildings. When they go downstairs, you have the drugs, the crime, the prostitutes, the gangs, and all of that. There's a Tenderloin after school program where any kids, no matter what kind of papers you have, can go after school starting from 12, and they are open 6 days a week except Sunday, from 5 years to 17 years old. They give them a safe place to go and play. They help them with homework. They have computer labs there. We also organize safe stop, like during Halloween, because you cannot stop anywhere for Halloween for those kids, you know, in Tenderloin. But we have safe stops where they can be transported, and there's like 5 stops where they can feel safe and still be kids. And the most important thing is they're inspired to get out of this circle and go to, you know, colleges. Still, they don't feel citizen of the world. In Gandhi Ashram in New Delhi, near Kingsway Camp, this is where Mahatma Gandhi lived his last 12 years. This is where he passed away, where he was shot. There is a school, boarding school, for 300 kids from kindergarten to fifth grade. These are kids whose parents are labeled untouchables. And if they're not in boarding school, they may not be going to any school. So whatever we raise, we split between these two groups of kids. However, the most important thing which we do is connect these two group of kids through letters, through pictures, and hopefully soon through emails. And our dream wish is to have a teacher-student exchange program. So when it happens in New Delhi, we take care of every cost, including all the services is donated by each and every staff. So these are $25, but $5 will go to Compassion Chef's Cafe for each one of them bought. And thank you very much for being here. And I do have something for you, and I think I'm the only person kind of in between these two things, some really good food. So I want to get out of my way, but we do have a few question answer and some things. We have some nice mini samosas with two different chutneys, mint chutney and tamarind chutney. We have a chicken biryani, which is a rice dish with saffron and chicken, nuts and raisins. Thank you.
Ranjan, thank you very much. And we look forward to tasting your wonderful food. We do have, as usual at the Commonwealth Club, time for our questions. And I'm going to start with my own question,
yes,
which is, I believe that something like 80% of Indians are vegetarian. Is that true, and is that changing? Are more people becoming vegetarian or fewer people?
I think less than 80% people are vegetarians now, because it is changing. More people are open to trying different things. Technology is there, and there is fast food everywhere. You know, we have McDonald's, we have Burger King, we have Domino's Pizza, Pizza Hut, Popeyes. However, McDonald's doesn't serve any red meat in India. It only serves Maharaja Burger, which is made out of chicken. We have fish. We have all different kind of vegetarian things there. So there is a very, very traditional group of people who are vegetarians. And within the traditional group of families, the younger people are most probably reaching out and trying a little bit. And then it's like being a teenager. But in the realm of culinary world. So you'll try it, maybe most of them will go back to their vegetarian roots later on. Mm-hmm. You know, but a lot more people are trying on vegetarian food. Mm.
Speaking about reminds me, who eats the cows in India?
Who eats the cows?
Yeah.
In India, which is a little bit more than a billion people, so every sixth person in the whole world is Indian. Okay, not here. But 80% of that, no, more than 88% of that are Hindus. Then we have Muslims who will eat beef, but not pork. Christians will eat beef. Parsis will eat beef, but Buddhists and Jains won't. Sikh, they won't, but some of them. But now it is again, world is becoming, a lot of people are trying. So, you know, it's available. Before it was banned in certain state, it's called dry state, no more. It's available. Yeah, but now it is open.
Yes, I wasn't going to say anything, but I've been a vegetarian for 40 years and my husband for 50. He's almost 60 because he's 80. And to me, it's a tragedy if India's eating more meat, because America's just the opposite. We don't even think at all about what we're eating. We just eat anything, and it's greedy and it's cruel. It's ruining the climate, the world, and I hope they're not changing, because we could learn a lesson.
I am actually 125 years old. It is the spices which keeps me looking young.
Okay.
I am still the same. I'm not going to change. I will eat meat. It's just a moderation. Everything in moderation is great, you know, but I do understand what you're saying. Vegetarian.
Huh? There's no moderation about killing animals. Forgive me.
No, I agree. But, you know, there is like room for everybody to exist.
Yes, I have a question about an ingredient that I... When I'm shopping for produce, particularly when there are Indian people and Chinese, I know how they use it, but I don't know how the Indian people use it. They frequently specialize in making sure they have bitter melon.
Uh-huh.
However, I have never seen bitter melon in an Indian restaurant. So I understand that's because Americans don't eat it. As a matter of fact, one of my friends, he's a Sikh, he told me that. He said, even in India, you won't find restaurants that have bitter melon. But everybody eats it in their home all the time. So is that the reason it's just economically not viable? And beyond that, what's a good way to make it in Indian style?
Yes, it is true. Bitter melon is something which was forced onto me when I was little. I hated it. I love it now. I love it. You know, I love that bitter taste, you know. I also love the texture, the ridges, and how it's cooked. It can be cooked in several ways. It's one of the latest and most effective diabetes solution. If you have bitter melon juice early in the morning, you know, raw bitter melon juice or bitter melon powder, it's great. In restaurants, yes, it just doesn't, I won't have too many people ordering it. The first time, my wife, you know, I met her when I started I was running this whole chain of restaurant called Viceroy of India. And she was running this pub next to it called Prince of Wales Pub. So I can say I met her through Prince of Wales and Viceroy of India. But on her first visit to India, she was served bitter melon. And she didn't know what it is. She just scooped it in and then, she didn't know what to do with it. And, you know, well, she just took all of it and put it on my plate, right? Everybody thought she loved it. So they put more on her plate. So I got more, but you know, it doesn't make any sense in a restaurant to keep it because I won't be selling it much. And I don't have the time to educate people what it is. And I mean, it's just.
But the point is the people who do go through the initial process and all of a sudden it became easy. in my case, in my wife's case, after that initial shock, what is this I'm eating?
Yeah.
It becomes one of your favorite.
Yeah. Food. My wife loves it now.
So what is a good way to prepare it?
Prepare it? There are so many ways. You can just saute with other vegetables, you know, with a little bit of cumin, whole cumin, or what is called nigella. There's a black seed, like an onion seed. It's fantastic. You can put different kind of vegetables, like you can even put plantain, like green plantain, carrots. You can put the bitter melon and potatoes in it, and cook it with a little bit of curry in it and a little bit of water, and just slow cook it, and then have it with white rice. Fantastic.
Can I ask you a quick question? Well, two quick questions. One is, can you speak a little bit to poha, if I'm saying that right?
Poha, the rice? Poha.
And then the second thing is where do you get fresh curry leaves?
Curry leaves? Curry leaves recently has been banned by FDA.
Yeah.
You know, they said there was like, just like you have the tomato scare and things like that, there was some scare like that. But if you know the Indian store and the owner, you can still get the curry leaves, you know? And second, poha is basically rice processed in different forms. You take the rice, you boil it, and then what happens, you press it. So it becomes very flat. And then you can reconstitute it by putting water in it, and then you can just cook with it, or you can just soak it in milk, have a little sugar and have that, or you can make a almost, you know, you can take black mustard and have some peanuts and a little bit of curry and just temper it, put the poha, like the one which is soaked, and just stir fry it. Or you can just fry it in oil and it will be like a little snack, trail mix, and you can add different things in it, little spices. So all different ways of doing it. Yes, ma'am.
Years ago, I lived in India and I remember people
talking about the Gandhi retreat centers. And it's like a mythical thing now. I don't even know if it ever existed, but because I've looked for it. Do you remember this? Do you know where I'd find that?
Most probably there is like 2,500 Gandhi Retreat Center, because everyone wants to name it Gandhi Retreat Center. But there's two main Gandhi ashram.
Okay, but wait a minute. They were the retreat centers where you could go and do fasts.
There is 2,500.
Okay. But green papaya.
But yeah, all different kinds. Because Gandhi, now the name of Gandhi has been leveraged into everything, you know?
Yeah.
So he stands for our, you know, like the father of nation, and it's a very well-recognized name, so everybody would love to use something with Gandhi in it, right? But if you're looking for a retreat center, if you find, you know, you have to find what you want to do in it. And what, I mean, just talking about Gandhi ashram, I can say there was two main Gandhi ashram. One is in Ahmedabad, where it's in Sabarmati Gandhi ashram, where he was before he moved to Delhi. And in the Delhi ashram is the Kingsway Camp ashram. You can go to Sabarmati, there is retreat there, everything vegetarian, you have prayers, you can volunteer, there are kids over there who can help and do all of that. But Gandhi Retreat Center could be thousands and thousands and thousands.
The main feature was that you could do a fast with steamed green papaya, and they knew how to do it really well. But
there are many of them.
Okay. Okay.
Many of them.
Okay.
I'm sure there's one in Berkeley, too. Or we can do one. No, that's enough. Yes, ma'am.
I had two questions for you. The first being, where can you get good Indian spices in San Francisco? Like, do you have to drive to San Jose to get them? And my second question is, I was in Rainbow Groceries the other day, and I saw that they were selling...
Where were you?
Rainbow Groceries.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I saw that they were selling turmeric root. Yeah. And exactly how do you prepare that, or how do you use it? Because I know how to use the dry powdered turmeric, but I had no idea what to do with the turmeric root.
Okay. The first... spices in San Francisco, there are several stores, you know. On Post and Polk, there is one called India Bazaar. Then in Valencia, there is called Bombay Bazaar. Then there is several in Tenderloin, but it's not the best neighborhood, you know. But the Bombay Bazaar,
do you cut a piece off, or do you have to soak the entire thing? Do you have to remove like the skin or something? Like no, it's you can just cut the entire thing. Okay, they're not. Uh huh. The hard root. Okay. Yeah, I think so too.
Would you comment on hot chilies, which chilies should be used, and do you treat them just like a vegetable? You just add it as you would any other vegetable?
Chilies have many properties, you know. Actually, chili can help ulcer also. It has many properties. It is very personal taste, how much heat you want in your food. Certain days, I love it. If it's a cold day, I love it to be really spicy. I like the burning in my lungs. You know, it's like, it is really, really good, you know? But I don't know how much chili you can take. Chilies, when they are bought, they will you'll see mild chili, medium, and hot chili. What does that mean? Chilies are usually measured in Scovilles, that's a heat unit. And usually mild chilies are 15,000 heat units. The medium chilies are 25 to 30,000 heat units. Hot chilies are 50 to 80,000 heat units. However, in India, we have the hottest chili in the whole world. It's called the ghost chili, which you find in Assam, in Guwahati. That's the eastern part. The heat unit of those with the little chilies are 800,000 heat units. Today, the government of Assam is using it to actually help the elephant population not coming into the parameter villages. They have huge, you know, like curtains that put way out, and they trade with that. And so when the elephant comes in, because people are actually, you know, getting into their space, so they don't want, but the elephants are used to going and roaming in that space. But when they feel that, they turn around and go away instead of using darts and things like that.
I have a quick question. My name is Sudeep Rao. Back when I was a kid, my father in South India in Andhra Pradesh forbid me and my brother from entering the kitchen because he said, oh, that's the domain of women. He was from the old school, even though he was an engineer. But when I was in grad school in New Mexico, I had to ask my mother to write letters, and I laminated those letters, and they had recipes in the back. So now I feel like I'm a pretty good cook. I can. So one thing I noticed is that with cooking, you really have, it's almost very therapeutic. And because, first of all, you have to pay attention that you don't cut your finger off. And at the same time, it's something about smells and the olfactory perception of different spices and herbs and things like that. It just wakes you up as a person. And especially when you're cooking for someone else. So my question is, have you come across people who have actually talked about the therapeutic aspects of cooking and things like that?
It's so therapeutic, and it's an art, you know? And the art sometimes you can't repeat. Personally, for me, I love cooking at home when there's nothing in the fridge, you know? Because that's a challenge for me. And I never do it again, because, and sometimes it's awful, believe me. It's like not 100 times, it's not good. Because to me, following a recipe is just like recreating another piece of art. But when I don't have anything, I don't know what is there, I'm just finding things and cooking, you know, because in my mind, when I cook, I do different things. I'll look at different ingredients, and it will create a flavor profile in my mind. If I put this and this and this together, it will create this flavor. And usually you'll know, well, that will be fantastic, or, oh, God, no, don't do it, you know. And just follow that, you know, and it is so therapeutic. It's so creative, and it really, like, enlivens all your five senses. Especially we call in the Hindu philosophy, Atitheya Deva Bhava. That means my guest is my God. So when you are cooking for your guest, you are cooking for God. And it's just so giving and so totally, you know, amazing. So yeah, it is. It is beautiful.
Another question?
So, I will please help yourself. Here is the, you know, chicken biryani, and we have some green tomatoes. Enjoy.
Thank you. Yeah. You know what? There's so many people. Let's start over here at this side, and maybe let's have the row go down this aisle because we have all these chairs. Ranjan, thank you again so much for sharing your experience and delicious meal and stories of India. Thank you.